into The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world, tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Good afternoon and welcome to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. As always, we're here until the hour of 6. If you are new, if you are a veteran, welcome aboard, veteran. As usual, one exciting topic after another. And today is today's topic is about the EU and the African Union and their 25th anniversary partnership. Accomplishments and failures and success. If you just tuned in and you want to change the station, oh, relax. Libya is coming up somewhere. It turns out the partnership between the African Union and the European Union started in the early 2000s. And we're talking about somewhere in April where they came together for the first time, these two blocks. One is mostly political and the other is mostly economical. We are the political, if you are wondering which one is political and which. So we care more about politics than making money. Europeans, on the other hand, care more about making money than they do. I mean, they have their own political squabbles, left, right, and center, but they do that while first making money. No, not us. We just, fight while we are broke. That's what we do best. Now, that's something that I think we should really look at. We should look into changing that. Because, well, what's the point of, trying to punch each other in the face when you're both broke? Now, that's, speaking of punching each other in the faces while you are both broke. I'm just scrolling through my a bunch of YouTube videos like everyone else. Basically, billions of people do every evening, I'm sure. This was yesterday, and well, guess what I ran into? Something that complements my show today. Soldiers seize power in Guinea-Bissau and detain the president. I was like, huh? Oh, come on. Now, because there's just so many Guineas, I know how to figure out. I'm like, okay, which one? It turns out it's the one that side of Sierra Leone, not the one this side of DRC. That is Equatorial Guinea because it's in the equator. Now, and not Guinea-Conakry, because, well, Guinea-Conakry is the capital city, is Conakry. Don't ask me why that sounds like someone just took a guitar and then just ran their fingers through the string and were like, well, now, from now moving forward, that sound will be the name of our capital city, Conakry. Really? That's the best they could come up with? Now, if you're from Guinea and you're listening, Guinea-Conakry, and you're listening, please don't punch me in the face. Assuming you'll even be able to recognize me if we ran into each other. But here's the thing. Whatever you do, moral of the story, at least, whatever you do, if you ever find yourself in one of the highest, public offices, especially the executive office, be nice to the army. Because, well, it turns out those guys are not very good at negotiating. They are literally trained to soldier through, as in bulldoze their way through whatever it is that is in front of them to get to their main goal. So now I know why it is wise for the leader to be nice to the army. But still, my favorite coup was Niger. Because, well, these are the soldiers that just went straight. Well, was that back in 2021 or 2022? They just went straight to the president and said, Oga, Your Excellency. From the look of things, things still look like you are still in bed with the French. So, while we are still asking, can you please leave the office? Thank you. Look, we are asking now, but 5 minutes down the line, we're not going to be asking. So while we are still saying, please, could you please leave? And His Excellency now reading through the questionable powers transition of a lot of African countries, especially that region, went like, we know how this ends. It's either you leave or they're going to make you leave. It's just safe to leave while they are still being polite. Like, I respect the Nigerian, not Nigerian, I respect the Nigerian army. As it turns out, it was the first army to ever ask the president nicely to leave. At least that was, okay, now, well, option one, ask him nicely. If he's not leaving, then you basically, well, kick him the heck out of that office. Now, that's not what we are here to discuss, though. We are here to talk about that 25 years of anniversary. 25 years. Now, for those of you that are saying, ah, no, you know what? you know what? Well, 20 is the new teens, and 30 is the new 20s, and 40 is the new... No, it's not. 30 is just 30. Yeah. Yeah, because I feel like sometimes we like to tell ourselves a lot of lies to make ourselves comfortable. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I love geopolitics, and geopolitics is about lying. Like literally, geopolitics is about lying left, right, and center. If you want to die in geopolitics, just tell the truth. That's the easy way to go quickly. So, the first summit that was held by the first summit that officiated the African Union, European Union, collabo in a lot of ways, everything from, developmental, which is why, the European Union is a developmental partner of, I mean, is one of Namibia's developmental partners. And the European Union, not Europe, because now you have to go east or west. So the European Union, which is it's a club of, 27 Western European countries for the most part, and a little bit of few Eastern or Central ones. Yeah, throw in, you know, think of Hungary and in that bucket. So, the African Union and the European Union came together in April of 2000, 25 years ago. Now, while going through that, I'm like, hey, so someone who was born in 2000 is now 25 years. That's a fully grown man or woman. Fully grown. So, time to grow up, gentlemen. Time to grow up. I mean, if you are in Brewer's Market and you are trying to shake something and you are hearing the beck sounding like like a donkey Botswana without the proper shock absorbers, you know, going in a gravel road, now you know it's time to park the bus and basically think about. I don't know. Just enjoy life, Baba. Enjoy life. Not here to judge. Who am I kidding? If this was Sunday, I would be here to judge. But since it's Thursday, right? Yeah. Since it's Thursday, here for official business. That's what I tell myself. Myself every day. So let's look at this partnership now, because when they met when the African Union and the European Union representatives met from the 24th to the 25th of November 2025. So that's just a fairly recent event that just took place. And I tried to get an audio of you from that that I wanted to use. But the thing is, considering the venue, now I think I've been in this line of work long enough to know that the venue most likely, and now when it comes to these international discussions, especially the diplomatic ones, the venue where the country is held is going to tell you what is going to be the dominating language of communication during that event. Because, well, wherever the event, especially summits are held, the president of that country is going to be chairing the event. So they're going to be conducting themselves in their official, mode of communication. In this case, that event has a lot of Portuguese. A lot of Portuguese. Now it's like, oh, well. I mean, I'm pretty sure there are Namibians out there that understand Portuguese, especially Windhoek North. Ouch. Now. So. I just decided to stick to the written, a reference in terms of today's discussion. So here's the thing. The union started in 2000. And at the beginning of that event, the 25 years commemoration in Luanda, Angola, the first thing they did was something very, you know, something that I thought was very interesting. They first had to go through, the past 25 years, their history, what they went through, their challenges and success. That's one thing I like about diplomatic language. They don't call it success and failures. You rarely, if ever, hear that. Analysts use that a lot. But in diplomatic discussions, they like to say, to be, of course, diplomatic and politically correct. Like we have had a few successes and challenges. We could learn a thing or two about political language because, it's not success and failures. It's success and challenges, which baffles me all the time. I know I've heard it 1,000 times, but it's really fascinating that not success and failures, success and challenges. Okay, interesting. So 25 years of partnership. 25 years of partnership. We're still depending on them for money on a lot of projects. African Union, we really have to pull our socks up. But I'm going to get to low-key cooking. I'll be, make sure we're not, half-bent. Let's keep it to medium rare. African Union and the European Union celebrates 25 years of partnership. In 2025, the African Union and and the European Union celebrates their unique and successful partnership. Very positive language. Successful partnership. The formal political agreement between organizations has provided invaluable opportunities for both continents to develop. This is the part now that made me go are we talking about the same African Union here, or we're talking about a different one? Because now let's just look at some of the simple differences between these two organizations. Because you are looking at EU on one hand, and you are looking at AU on the other. That's the African Union. Except there's just one little problem. Like I pointed out earlier, one is very heavily involved in everything political, and the other likes to make money. Nah, this African Union website is just misbehaving now. Oh, look. Turns out it can also misbehave and then turn around and work. Now the European Union, the EU likes to make money. And also, now, how to put this? The EU has a very nice, match of politics and economics. Us, on the other hand, we have a very lopsided, I don't want to call it a match of politics and economics. Because if you look at the two blocks, just by comparison, the EU has 27 members. The African Union has 50 plus members. Did you hear me? 50 plus members. Almost two times the membership. Now, let's look at something even more painful. You want to know how much resources these 50-plus countries have? Oh, how much time do you have? Because here on Home Run, we don't have a lot of that time. Because that's how much resources Africa has. All 50-plus countries has a lot of the resources that they could be using for their own development. EU, on the other hand, this comparison is, look, this, is the most painful subject you can have. Because if you look at the numbers alone, and you look at the landmass, Africa is a mammoth. It's a giant. Natural resources-wise, giant. Population-wise, giant. And economical power, minion. Not million, minion. African Union, aka the Organization of African Union, was founded in 1963. I'm just looking at the money here. I'm just looking at the money. Oh yeah, here's the money. Fasten a seatbelt. GDP 2025 estimates total 10.8 trillion Africa. GDP 2025 estimate. Purchasing power parity. PPP. Africa is standing on 10.8 trillion. The EU, 27 countries. With the landmass that can fit in your pocket. GDP 2025 estimate 29.2 trillion. Guys, what are we doing? Just what? 25 minus 10 trillion. 25 minus 10, you have 15. A block that is, that has the landmass that can fit in your pocket has, 15 times more economic power than a giant like Africa. Congratulations. But hey, at least we're partners, right? I mean, we're going to work something out at some point, I'm sure. Chesu. Population 2025 estimate of both. African Union is standing at 1.5. Whoa. Yeah. African Union, the African Union member states population total is at 1.5 billion. We're 1.5 billion population wise. Now, where is the EU population? 450 million. Ladies and gentlemen, the bloc that we have been in partnership with for the past 25 years has 15 times more economic power than us. There are 27 member states. We are 50 plus. And, most of the countries don't have resources. We have it in droves. You know what we are using it? You know what we are doing? Well, this is, now when you ask yourself that question, that's where this whole, economic differences now begins to make sense. Because we are shipping 90% of that resources to them. And they're doing all the processing, value addition, and maybe building everything into finished products and then sending that stuff to us for us to buy with mostly corrupt money. Aren't we just geniuses? Look, look guys, sometimes I'm really trying not to be a comedian, but this is very depressing. Now, as a defense mechanism, because, well, I don't want to get a heart attack over something that I didn't chop, like corruption-wise. So I just, keep taking the direction of sarcasm. And here's the thing. When it comes to, when it comes to value addition, I think, one difficult conversation, not really difficult conversation, one very simple conversation to have, one very simple conversation to have in terms of understanding is that, as to why value addition is important, is because when you are processing something, you are looking at a factory. That factory is going to need a lot of manpower to operate, say for a few that are being replaced left, right, and center by AI and a bunch of robots, which was also designed by people being replaced. I mean, human beings, we're really good at shooting ourselves in the feet. But here's the thing. If you're going to process, take for example, if you just go online right now and you look up an oil refinery, you'll see that this is a giant piece of infrastructure. That means at every level, you have an employee. At every level, you have an employee. And if the infrastructure, take for example, like an oil refinery, is like, depending on the size, some of them can be the size of your village. Can you imagine the facility that big? Like how many people it's going to employ? Short answer, a lot. So, This is why the discussion of value, of value addition at home is a very touchy one, especially when it comes to developed countries, most of which are coming out of the EU. But, I'll just put that aside and we'll conclude with that. Let's first go through, what they discussed. Or fasten your seatbelt. You know, when I said there is Libya somewhere there? There is. There is Libya somewhere there. So, how did they summarize this 25-year history between the two blocks? One with money and another one begging for money from the other. This is painful. But then, I still have an hour and 4 minutes. And I have like a bunch of paragraphs, so don't worry, we have all the time. So, below is a key. Now that's according to the African Union. They did not even live stream this thing on their YouTube channel. I had to find the live stream from Reuters YouTube channel. As well, like, okay, is it one of those things where you don't want to, be embarrassed by your own lack of progress in comparison to your homies? Those of us that had a chance to go to school, we know how it feels to go to school with your homies and then get a report card. You have a failed one and your homies had pass ones. And now when you get home, you want to guess who is going to be hiding? Not those ones that failed. Those ones will be flying their report cards high. Yours, on the other hand, will be folded a million times somewhere deep, under, let's go with socks, for crane's sake. So it's way deep and definitely not talking from experience. Now, below is a look at the key milestones and achievements of this 25-year journey. That's the African Union, European Union journey. And while listening to this, I want you to put in mind that the European Union is financing a bunch of programs on this continent. And they are also, we also have an AU-EU joint 2030 vision. Which means the goal is to build as much developmental, is to run as much developmental programs as possible, so that we can reach the level of economic power and service provision of a developed block as a continent by 2030. You wanna know whose money we are relying on to accomplish all this? The EU. Now, look, when I tell you that we need prayers, I mean, we need a lot of them. At this point, we need prayers, like, straight from the source. We're talking straight from God the Father on this one, because, well, clearly, that's how much help we need. Not want, need. So, from 3 to 4 April 2000, the first summit took place in Cairo, Egypt, titled The New Dimension of Our Global Partnership for the 21st Century. This is the 2000, Baba. This is the 2000. Well, the Roman calendar have just transitioned in terms of, in terms of time from the 20th century to the 21st century. The previous year was 1999, and everyone was just bored of the, you know, of the whole 99999 stuff. So they will transition into a new century, 2000. As except for Ethiopia and Nepal. I think Nepal was already in 2060 by then, because I understand now they're in 2080. They met, and then they came up with a summit in Cairo, Egypt, and had this theme. More on the other side of the break.
Sometimes you have to raise a Vinduk beer and say cheers to you, the real ones. You know, the ones who save you a spot for the game when the bar is crowded. The ones who offer to drive for the night to keep everyone safe. The ones who bring you a cold Vinduk beer without being asked. When they're there for you in ways you never knew you needed, they aren't just friends. They're the real ones. So cheers to them. Vinduk, 100% real beer for real people. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
With either a non-alcoholic Heineken, Savannah, Vinduk Original, or Vinduk Lemon. Let's cheers to connecting. To moments shared and good vibes. Anytime, anywhere. Grab one of our great tasting non-alcoholic beers or ciders. Easy to connect, easy to enjoy. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Lipurane ngeno wapungwa eva tere ulikoni maundu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nuku dite opoe ekukurile oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano hile koshwana onongeshe fa ya pumbo kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka okupitira oipindi konu konda doi inawa minu don otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe fa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendi fenawa nokumona oijabo ili nawa ninge fa Fanona, Monica, Co, Eagle FM, Honora Tatime, Bali Hairi, Nola Natu, Hairi Bali, No Hair, Ileco, Berewa, Horahetatu Natu, Bali O Hetatu Batatu, Oma Filane, Eagle FM, the Eye.
Welcome back. You know, it's very dangerous to listen to things repeatedly because, you know, that Voormalbroek ad that goes, Voormalbroek UK. I think I've listened to that thing one too many times in the studio. So one day I find myself at Hyper in Voormalbroek. I'm just doing my regular shopping with my friend. And the next thing I know, that thing is playing and one, you know, on their sound system. And well, what do you know? I'm already singing along. That's when I was like, repetition. If you want to learn something, repetition. Very important. If you don't want to get, hooked up on something, especially something, addictive, don't repeat it. Actually, don't do it. Yeah. So. Back to our AU-EU 25 years of collabo. So, 3 to 4 April 2000, new century. The African Union and the African EU summit set the framework for constructive dialogue. Really constructive. The next part is coming over why I'm saying really constructive. Yeah. The first ever Africa EU summit set the framework for constructive dialogue with leaders from both sides. Underline the word leaders. We're going to come back to that part. With leaders from both sides. First committing committing to strengthen political, economical, and cultural ties. Let me repeat that again. April, 3 to 4 April 2000, the first ever African Union, European Union summit set the framework for constructive dialogue with leaders from both sides committing to strengthen political, economic and cultural ties. All right. Key achievements of that event.
It set a foundation for a long-term partnership. Africa and Europe built a common value, equality, mutual respect, and cooperation. Underline mutual respect. We're going to get to that in a few. And then you have, Lisbon summit was, the next one was in Lisbon, Portugal. And the summit was a turning point in a partnership, in the partnership. It followed the creation of the African Union and its economic program. From a time thing, you know, Organization of African Unity, African Union type of, you know, time thing. And its economic program. I don't want to go through that torture alone. So I'm going to read it again. The Lisbon summit was a turning point in a partnership. It followed the creation of the African Union and its, forget the African Union. We all know at some point it changed from Organization of African Unity to African Union. So that's not important. But, and the creation of its economic program. What the heck were we doing this whole time? I know, you know, liberation struggle, blah, blah, blah. We're doing that.
And I guess who we're trying to liberate ourselves from?
It's a love-hate relationship, Baba. Give us a break. Well, it was bound to happen at some point.
So, the achievements, the adoption of a joint Africa-EU strategy, the first long-term framework for corporations. And the EU, like I pointed out earlier, funds multiple projects across the continent, which helps a lot of Africans. And some of you listening may be beneficiaries in one way or another. And if you are going, oh no, I don't think I'm any beneficiary of any European Union type of projects. How many hospitals have you visited? What are you most likely to find at the entrance?
Proudly funded, proudly sponsored by the European Union. That's the type of European Union we're talking about.
So, when it comes to giving you their money in terms of development-wise, that's something they're actually very good at. Now, the question that a lot of those of us that are a little too inquisitive like to ask from time to time is, how do they make this money? Well, we give them raw material, create employment, empower their economic capabilities, and then they give us change in return. Congratulations. You're an idiot.
Have to be diplomatic.
So, before you start saying, I'm not a beneficiary of this. Yes, you are. Yes, you are. That relationship has come with, with pros and cons. Just like everything else. That's to be expected. And if you look at countries like Namibia, for example, the EU as a bloc is not just one-off. I'm not sure if it's our or one of our biggest developmental partner, but it's also one of, if not our biggest trading partner. Especially when it comes to meat. We sell a lot of our meat to the EU, to the EU market, both to the EU as a bloc and to individual EU members like Germany and Norway, for example. Yeah, the Norwegians eat a lot of our meat. Yeah, they do. So, achievements from Lisbon: adoption of the joint EU of the joint Africa EU strategy, the first long-term framework for cooperation, establishment of institutional structure and funding mechanism for key actions. Translation: that's when they started, officially pouring money on the African continent in terms of, trading wise and developmental wise. And then that brings us to 2010. That's actually my favorite part. 2010. That brings us to 2010. In 2010, the EU-AU annual summit, because it's an annual one, it's held every year, took place in Tripoli, Libya. Now,
let's put a pause on that and let's go back to 2000. From the 3rd to the 4th of April 2000, the first ever Africa-EU summit set a framework for constructive dialogue. Put a pause on constructive dialogue, underline that one, with leaders from both sides. Excellent, you know, talking things out. They didn't really do a lot of talking back in 2011, now, did they? Nope, it was just, we're going to blow you up. Oh, regime change. Which, well, Tony Blair turned around. What did Tony Blair apologize for? Was that Tony Blair was Iraq with his homie Bush. Libya was, unfortunately, for a lot of people that thinks that geopolitics has anything to do with skin color, that was Obama. When it comes to geopolitics, basically, when it comes to life, forget geopolitics. When it comes to life, it's always those that look like you or closest to you. Those are the ones you should worry about. Those are the ones you should really worry about. Now, leaders engaging in discourse to solve problems. And then let's go to 2010. Now, let's go there. It's called, it was held in November 2010. And then, 2011, bombs were falling in Libya. Now, November 2010, Tripoli summit, Libya. The Tripoli Declaration. Called Connecting EU and Africa, the third summit focused on economic growth and job creation, highlighting the importance of stronger economic ties and regional integration. And that was the last we had of the African Union and the European Union with regards to where is even Libya on the map. Now, the key achievements from that discussion, adoption of the Tripoli Declaration, which included its second African plan, which ran from 2011 to 2013. Of course, Libya was not part of that one because, we all know what happened to Libya, what happened in Libya back in 2011, for a joint African Union, Africa EU strategy. Another accomplishment that came out of, the annual EU AU summit, the one that took place in 2010 in Libya. The second achievement was a reinforced cooperation in 8 thematic areas, including peace, security, sustainable development. Yeah, well, now this was compiled. When was the 24th. Yeah, what I'm reading right now was compiled this week. I watched that whole thing and went, so we are just going to pretend like we didn't reduce Libya to smithereens shortly after this summit. Nah, it turns out, just don't do it. And the last one, key achievement as listed by the 7th EU-AU annual summit, they say, annual summit. Well, here's the thing. The one that took place this year was the 7th. And on their 7th annual gathering, I don't know who came up with this language, they celebrated their 25th anniversary. Now, imagine reading through this and you are not really well acquainted with all this lingo and you are going, so this partnership have been in existence for 25 years. And The third one took place in Libya, Tripoli, in 2010. At this point, part of me, you know, at this point, a part of me is going, whoever wrote the heading of the UN Secretary General's speech for this event must be fired. Annual, it's the seventh after 25 years.
Heineken's iconic balanced taste that gives you that refreshing first only made possible by Heineken's five-star credentials. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
You are now listening to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight, weekdays from 4:30 to 6, only on Eagle FM. Download the app or tune in to a frequency near you.
And welcome back. So, now, here we are. That annual after 25 years. Look, I know I went to a government school, so I'm just going to give these private school students a break. So, un momento. And here we are. The last achievement is that the AU and EU adopted a joint declaration on climate change. This was in 2010, on climate change. To reaffirm their commitment to the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change and the Kyoto Protocol, and we all know what happened after that. 5 years later in 2015, a bunch of countries, basically UN member states, meet in Paris, France, where they signed the Paris Climate Agreements, which now all the countries have to meet and give reports. Those are the COPs of what economic progress that they are making with regards to combating climate change related issues. Now, at this point, I'm going, the initial idea was to use constructive dialogue, between the leaders from both blocks, you know, have constructive dialogue. Both leaders from both blocks to have constructive dialogue. And, it turns out 2011, dialogue was not very constructive. Now, at this point, you're going, okay, now what does this have to do with the EU? Because I know most, if not all, EU member states are also members of NATO. And you want to know who played a very primary role in dropping bombs in Libya in 2011? NATO. Now, one thing I like about this line of work is just how many patterns you can find in a lot of this information. And it's beautiful. Now, it's not actually recommended if you have a lot of friends. I don't have a lot of those. And that's because a lot of them find me boring because of things like this. Because I find it exciting. They find it boring. What they find exciting, it's just the preferences. What they find is exciting. When did you guys buy Messi again? We bought Messi in 2011 for 3 point something billion. Now, can I have the $300 you owe me from last year? We're just friends. I mean, you just bought Messi for 3 billion. So that means you have money. And anyway, so it's a preference thing. Don't worry. It's a preference thing. So now, let's go to the Secretary General's speech, because he did point out, something similar that, sort of like feeds into some of the more like commitments made for the past 25 years of the existence of this collabo. And, I was alone in the studio again. Last time I talked about the EU-AU joint Vision 2030 discussion, of which this year they gave reports of some of the accomplishments being made. Accomplishments made ever since they came up with this whole
African Union and European Union coming together to, you know, to try to achieve the Vision 2030 agenda. Now, there by Vision 2063, I think even the EU and, 2063? How many of you guys are going to be alive when this whole thing is, like, seriously? Let's go with 2030, guys. Come on. I intentionally picked the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres speech, you know, at this event, which is, because it's very interesting because if you have ever heard Antonio Guterres speak at any of these events, especially, those that pertains conflict resolution, this is the gentleman that is either he's very good at talking like he cares or he genuinely cares. The problem is, the people, contributing the most financially to organizations like the UN and other international bodies, well, they have to get that money to contribute in one way or another, most of which are very questionable. Like, blowing up stuff, for example, you know, or more like selling stuff that blows up stuff, including people. Those are weapons manufacturers, by the way. So, I only have, a bunch of pages of this whole protocol observed and stuff. The Secretary General speaks more about the global shift in power, because and if you're one of those people that like to follow geopolitical trends, more like geopolitical stories, then you must have come across people like people like Mir Shaima, who likes to use words like unipolar and multipolar. That's a fancy way of saying the world is changing in a way that one country making all the decisions unanimously for everyone else to follow. That model of geopolitics is quickly shifting. Hence, actually, one of the reasons between the tensions, between all the military and economics, powerhouses, basically. You have a lot of tensions going on between the East and the West, especially the US with China and Russia. Because when you are the boss, picture geopolitics like this. Think of it as like being behind bars. And I'm told every behind bar place, or more like every street, has that guy that everyone fears. Now, when someone who is also fearsome shows up at the same street, well, it causes some type of, power dynamic. You know, power tension is going to be caused there. And it's the same thing I've also come to learn by being told about slay queens. When there is someone that's been told that they are very good at slaying in their street, and someone who slays better than them shows up, they're not going to be like, oh man, this is someone that, we could be slaying together. No! That's how you'd actually expect things to go, but it's more often because, well, human beings, we're just very selfish. We want everything to ourselves. You are going to have a lot of tension. Wherever there's a bully, when someone stronger shows up than that bully is not going to embrace the new bully. There is going to be a lot of tension. Why? Power struggle. We are control freaks, aren't we? Human beings. Very much control freaks. Men are mostly control freaks when it comes to politics. But when it comes to social things, no, we are not very good at, control freaks when that's where, ladies, that's where you guys shine. Every CEO that you run into, if he is married, he is a boss at home. He's a boss at work. At home, he is scared to death of his wife. And I think that's where this, things like happy wife, happy life now comes in. You'll find the bossy, you know, you have your army general who is there telling you, attention, all that, when he gets home.
Yeah. Oh, he's the one doing the attention. You are playing you. So this is basically, well, this is basically geopolitics 101. So, the SG goes into start looking at things like, how should we, you know, more like, how we should do the, you know, how we should more like, face this transition. Because whether we like it or not, power is changing. Now, for those of you that are not aware of it, the West, especially the US, has something they call the Monroe Doctrine, where they basically state on their own without asking everyone's permission in the, you know, in the Western Hemisphere, that, no competitor basically is allowed to set up especially military installations in the Western countries. In other words, the Monroe Doctrine says, no competitor, like take China and Russia, for example, can set up any type of, you know, no one is allowed to dominate, politically in that part of the world. In other words, that the US saying, this is my turf. You are not allowed to do anything here. You can trade maybe, but only as much of, you know, as I can allow. Military installation is a no-go, which is, the reason behind, you know, the, what's that, well, basically the whole Cold War nonsense. Monroe Doctrine. Now, one thing I like about, you know, humanity and its selfishness is that, the very same US that has the Monroe Doctrine has about, 800 plus military bases scattered all across the planet. And, if you just go online right now and look up, South China Sea, and you are going to read a lot of stories of a tension between the US and China in South China Sea. It's in the name, South China Sea. You think it's a no-brainer? No, not really. Not really. It's geopolitics. I know it's very easy to look at it from the perspective of, this is a European thing, or this is a white people thing. No, it's not. It's not a white people thing. It's not a European thing. It's a power thing. Irrespective of you put in that position, they are going to behave the exact same way. All you just have to do is pick a history book and read the history of any empire, then you see that the empires do the exact same thing. Very short history. 1700s, the British declares slavery illegal. And then they start sending their armies to start hijacking, American slave ships and freeing the people they find there, which is a very noble exercise. Now, at this point, you're asking yourself, for a country that was literally built on that institution, why did they all of a sudden turn around and started hating slavery? Was it because they all of a sudden developed a conscience? No. In politics, nothing happens by accident. If it does, you can bet it was planned that way. I think that was Roosevelt. Now, why did the British make slavery illegal all of a sudden? It's because the US was a rising economic and military competitor. They did not want the US to develop at the same level that they were at the time. So they did anything to try to strangle them economically. And then they figured out they actually a genius part, which was two birds with one stone, if you can call it that. Here's the thing. The US economy depended a lot. Was a predominantly agrarian economy at the time. They depended a lot on plantations. Now, because these plantations needed a large amount of labor, most of that labor came from what? Slaves. And now the British at this point knew that the best way to stand America's economic growth is to hit them where it hurts the most. Their labor. And that's the only reason the British decided all of a sudden slavery is wrong. Are you kidding me? They didn't invent it. They basically been, human beings who have been enslaving each other ever since the beginning of mankind. Turns out, you know, give a man power, then you can just see who he really is. Most of it is more of a facade. So, here's the thing. That's, now back from that very terrible detour. It's not rocket science. Empires have to, but there's not a single country that became an empire by being nice. That's actually the sad reality of geopolitics. There is not a single empire that became an empire by saying, may I please take over your political, economic, and human resources? Please, no. They just, first of all, build an army, and then most of them build an army to defend themselves from an empire of their time. And then their empire becomes strong, because more often with time, empires power fade. And when that power fade, the guys that have been building up a military and economic power to defend themselves from the imperial bullies become the bullies themselves. You will read a lot of stories. Now, if you think this is a white people thing only, believe me, it's not. If you read a lot of slavery stories, you are going to read a lot of stories of black people that were given freedom to, you know, that were given freedom, aka they were freed by their masters as slaves, their so-called masters as slaves. You know, the first thing they did after that, they started getting slaves themselves. Now, at this point, you are going, really? You were in that shoe. Shouldn't you have learned a thing or two about just how terrible these institutions? No. As soon as these guys were freed, the first thing they did was get themselves slaves. In other words, as long as it's not negatively impacting me, I don't care about making money off of it. That's us. One easy example that's even more closer to home. You know, during the whole colonial era, when you have most of your liberation fighters were saying, let's free our people and give resources to the people. And then they freed the people. And they then give resources to the people. No, I mean, we freed them. The resources, this one is just for our pockets. And then the people were like, hang on a second. Well, when we fought to liberate this, when you're saying that you want to liberate the people and make sure that they have all these resources that's being stolen. And then they came to power. And then a bunch of them, by the way, the majority of the people that were fighting to liberate the people and the resources, they liberated the people and the resources they just decided to keep for themselves. See? It's human nature. Selfishness 101. And now, let's bring this even closer to home. We all know an activist or two who were very loud at criticizing the status quo, of criticizing the powers that be, and they were given a small position in the government. How far? The way they kept quiet. That's actually why I call it shut up money. But that's just for my, that's just for my Sunday show. If you just tuned in, this is Home Run with Helmed and Dwight on Eagle FM. In absentia on Eagle FM. Let's take a break. And then we'll come back on the other side. Then we can just get into this whole geopolitics, basically. EU, AU, UN Secretary General speech. Then we can just wrap it up from there with resources. And why this whole resources thing, why this economic gap between the EU and the AU, and why, at least from my point of view, we are not having an honest discussion on this subject. But that's what we'll sign out with. Let's take a break.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world, tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Welcome back to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight in absentia. So let's pay the bills. Vilvicha University 2026 applications are now open. New programs: Faculty of Health Science, Master of Public Health, Level 9, Mode of Delivery, Distance. Area of Specialization: Maternal Child Health, Public Health Nutrition, Mental Health and Well-being, Food Safety Management System, Sustainable Solid Waste Management, Innovative Approaches in Pharmaceutical Public Health, Drug Regulations, Child Protection and Adolescent Health, Violence Prevention and Intervention. Application fee is $230. Application deadline is 30 November 2025. For more information, please call 061-225-463 or 061-225-462. Vilvicha University, where everyone is an achiever. Now back to the EU-AU 25 years relationship collabo. The Secretary General pointed out that said, and I quote, "We are moving towards a multipolar world with global power in flux," end quote. He has a point. Because as of now, you know that Monroe Doctrine example that I gave earlier? As of now, China and Russia have become very cozy with Venezuela and a lot of South American countries. But the thing is, those countries are still in the Western Hemisphere. That means, according to the Monroe Doctrine, countries that have intimidating level of military and economic power, like China and Russia, are not supposed to be in there, especially when they don't have common interest with the U.S. So this relationship is also showing that the world really is moving from unipolar to multipolar. A couple of days ago, if I'm not mistaken, let me just confirm that. A couple of days ago, Russian military ship landed or docked. I mean, it's a ship; it's not landing. We're seen in parts of the southern hemisphere, parts of Venezuela. A lot of historians went, this is unprecedented. Well, that's because, unless you know what the Monroe Doctrine is, you will not actually see why the significance. Oh, yeah, it was 2 days ago. You will not actually see why that is a very, very, very interesting political shift, more like political change, to actually see. That was something interesting. That was something interesting. That's something interesting in the world of geopolitics to observe. These guys have been intercepting each other, not military ships. These are oil tankers. Now, at this point, you're asking yourself, what is a Russian oil tanker doing doing in Russia? Because Russia has its own oil. Why is the U.S. why does the U.S. like Venezuela's trying to dominate Venezuela's political sphere? Because this has been going on for a while. Remember the time when they actually went bust over the whole, when they were accused of trying to to overthrow, Maduro, and then replace him with what's the name of that guy? Juan Guaido. This for very obvious reasons. Even though both the U.S. and Russia have oil in their own countries, the biggest oil reserves ever discovered on the planet are in Venezuela. So, as you can see, this is where you begin now to look at politics. You have to look at politics beyond the politician, as in the guy in a suit. Because in both countries, especially the U.S., I'm saying especially the U.S. because one of the biggest difference between Russia and the U.S. is that, that's actually the difference, also the difference between the U.S. and China, is that in the U.S., rich guys control politicians. But in China and Russia, it's the other way around. Politicians control rich guys. And then, to some degree, larger degree, the politicians themselves are the rich guys. That's the U.S. and, that's Russia and Russia and China, mostly. But if you go west, the more you just find a bunch of guys in suits saying a lot of things that, their campaign contributors told them to say. They don't really mean it. It's just their, campaign contributor told me to say this if I want to, to run for office and win again and, get myself that campaign check in the coming election cycle. Geopolitics 101. Yeah, well, the game was written a long time ago, so I'm not making the rules. So that shift in Bloomberg wrote an article about U.S. warship cuts part of a Russian tanker headed to Venezuela. That was 5 days ago. And then it turns out the cutting off did not work very well because 3 days ago Russian tanker reaches Venezuela after earlier ships. Russian tanker loaded with Russian naphtha has that's your tar type of byproduct. It's a naphtha. No, that's bitumen. It's one of those byproduct of crude oil. If you look up the fractional distillation of crude oil, it's one of those byproduct. It's a flammable hydrocarbon. If you hear hydrocarbon, think oil. It's very simple. Now this is a crude oil byproduct, and it's used in a solvent and it's a precursor of gasoline, aka call it petrol, blah blah blah. Now if you hear hydrocarbon, think crude oil byproduct. That's for the most part. So the fact that you have China and Russia having this type of cozy relationship with South American countries, it's showing you one thing. Was that last year when the Brazilian government terminated millions of dollars worth of corn, corn or maize purchase from the U.S. So they can have it from China? Was it buying or selling? But Brazil basically terminated a trade agreement with the U.S. so they can run one with China. But now, which is not shocking because, well, Brazil is the B in BRICS. China is the C in BRICS, so it's not rocket science. Except when it comes to, you know, except when it comes to geopolitics, then it's concerning. Yeah. So your Secretary General moved on, went on to say that against the division of the world into two bodies, led by two big powers, we need an interconnected multipolarity with an inclusive network of.
Sometimes you have to raise a Vinduk beer and say cheers to you, the real ones. You know, the ones who save you a spot for the game when the bar is crowded. The ones who offer to drive for the night to keep everyone safe. The ones who bring you a cold Vinduk beer without being asked. When they're there for you in ways you never knew you needed, they aren't just friends. They're the real ones. So cheers to them. Vinduk, 100% real beer for real people. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Lipurane ngeno wapungwa eva tere ulikoni maundu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku dite opoe ekukurile oshafafana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano hile koshuana onongeshefa ya pumbo kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka okupitira oipindi konu konda doi nawa nune uto otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka okone ushendike nawa nokumona oijabu ili nawa ninge pata fanona monika ko Eagle FM onore satimwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile konderewa mura hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu oma filane Eagle FM the eye.
Welcome back. We continue. So, the geopolitical power is shifting, and like they say in, I think it's an African proverb at this point, because I've heard it in multiple languages on the African continent. When elephants fight, the grass suffers the most, especially now. That basically, in terms of geopolitics, that means when big powers are fighting, more often, as we have seen with countries like Ukraine, small countries are caught in the crossfire, unfortunately. Even to this day, the US is still threatening to invade Venezuela because they have bombed a bunch of what they have called drug boats, or more like cartel boats, but then the Venezuelan government keeps saying, no, those are fishing boats. You're just killing civilians, you idiot. You can look at that as a, you know, crossing the Rubicon. That was Caesar's, the Romans, in ancient Rome, crossing the river Rubicon was a declaration of war. In other words, if you wanted to go to war with Rome, just cross the river Rubicon with your army, and then, well, that's it. You don't have to say much. Now, countries actually do a lot of things to provoke each other to go to war, believe it or not. These are not kids. This is just a bunch of fully grown men and women just doing all these dumb things. You can just look up Operation Northwoods. North as in north, south, east. Woods as in firewood. Operation Northwoods, one of those very public knowledge, you know, what they call them, what, false flag attack. Please, I'm not giving people ideas. Now, take for example, there's some type of resources that Botswana has that we want to get. Now, the thing is, Botswana is acting all tough, but we have actually a military capacity that's more powerful than them. All we just have to do is just go to the border and then manufacture ourselves fake Botswana, you know, Botswana Defense Force uniforms, give them all types of identifying markers, and then we dress up Namibians in those uniforms to go and shoot our own people at the border, and then we can say, ha, Botswana, see, they're killing our people, therefore we're going to go to war with them. It's called a false flag attack. It's ugly, but it turns out it happens all the time in politics. Now, if you are the guy that wants that resources, then you can just fund everything from the false flag attack to the operations that are going to mine the resources. Yeah, before you go to war for quote unquote your country, ask yourself one question: am I really fighting with my country? Weapons of mass destruction. Iraq didn't have that. Oil, on the other hand, they had a lot of it, and gold. So, against the division of the world speech, UN General Assembly, UN Secretary General, General Assembly, against the division of the world into two blocks led by two big powers, we need an interconnected multipolarity with an inclusive network of intense relations on trade, development, financial institutions, with increasing political coordination, because the world right now is undergoing a lot of political division because of all the tensions that you're seeing flying left, right, and center. But multipolarity itself is not a guarantee of peace and prosperity. That's that's where the whole elephants fighting and small guys, grass suffer in the process. So you can totally understand, Mr. Guterres' point on that, multipolarity is, in itself, is not a guarantee of peace and security. Multipolarity can also mean power struggle. Every time that, an empire falls, a lot of countries start to kick the heck out of each other to try and basically take the throne. Think of it as having a king. And then the king dies without leaving an heir. A bunch of families around that throne will be killing each other for that throne. And that's not just for medieval Europe. That's the truth for everywhere. Power struggle is in every race and every religion. The Catholic Church at some point had like three popes who were all claiming, "I'm the one chosen by Peter." One of them was a pirate, by the way. Congratulations, Catholics. It was that one of them was a pirate. I'm not sure if that was the same time, but the Catholic Church has a history of having, has that in their history of having a pirate for a pope. I think if Homeboy actually ruled for a very long time, I'm pretty sure he would have shifted the Vatican City to be on a boat somewhere floating in the Caribbean. Wouldn't that be nice? Now, quick break, and then we sign out. We're not going to go with that. I'm just trying to sift through a bunch of information, but relax, I got this. Today's multipolarity to be successful, needs multiple institutions and dynamics as a condition for stability and equilibrium. What the Secretary General is basically pointing out there is something very interesting. Makes it very easy for you to solve disputes in people. Give them something to lose. Tell them that, okay, now this is the institution that's going to benefit all of you. So if it falls, you are all going to be impacted negatively. Therefore, you all have to safeguard it. I can't believe you have to do that with adults. You have to do that with adults. But before I disappear, before I sign out, I'm like wrap up, sign out and disappear, let's take a break.
Lipura nenge no wapungwa eva tere ulikoni maondu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku tete okoye ekukurile Oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuana Onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa Nune uto otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe fa omarude dayo loka Opone ushendife nawa nukumona oijamoiri nawa Ninge pata fanona monika ko Eagle FM Onora itafimwe bali heari nola natu heari bali no heari Ile konderewa mura hetatu natu bali o hetatu batatu Oma filane Eagle FM the eye
Welcome back. Now we have 6 minutes before I sign out. Now, this the part that I wanted to wrap it, to wrap up with, is one article from Reuters from 2011. Interesting enough. BlackRock, the giant asset management firm, you know, the one with, richer than the word rich. BlackRock sees resource nationalism as a threat to mine investing. Now, that is one of those articles that was basically translated in like a gazillion ways. BlackRock, the world's largest money manager, warned so-called resource nationalism was on a rise globally, threatening to undermine investment in sectors where governments are playing too heavy a hand. And at this point, I'm going okay. If we are talking about multilateralism, and now that means we want to establish institutions that will enable us to not only to have diplomatic relations, but also trade relations. So how is that a threat? Take, for example, Namibia's resources. Then Namibia's resources can be traded by Namibia under the control, of course, of the Namibian government. Botswana's resources can be traded by Botswana under the control of the government of Botswana. It turns out, mining investors, BlackRock's point of view. And by the way, BlackRock doesn't have the money it has. That's client money. Their clients are your Fortune 500, the world, top, 100 multinational corporations. Those are their clients. I really hope they didn't say that on behalf of their clients, because that would mean that their clients don't want to do fair business in terms of quote-unquote free market. But anyway, BlackRock's investment chief of natural resources at the time singled out the regimes of Zimbabwe and Hugo Chavez in Venezuela as extreme examples of government intervention, but also said Australia's move to introduce new taxes on mining companies was affecting sentiment. Wait, what? That's a problem? This is one of, if not the richest company I know on the planet saying, well, this whole thing of the government taking over resources, I mean, this is not very fair. It's going to negatively impact investment into these sectors that are being taken over. Extractive resources, basically, for the most part. That's it. You know what, where that takes us to? Iran, 1953. Mohammad Mossadegh overthrew and replaced with who? The Shah. Every regime change reflects that sentiment in that article, that nationalization threatens investment. Does it? Does it? Okay, all you just have to do is negotiate with the president or negotiate with the country. If they don't want you in their country, well, just they don't want you. Now, imagine me sitting here and then saying, this whole thing of asking out girls' numbers, it's threatening our masculinity. How about we just start, it's threatening in a way that, because I met this other girl this other time, I asked her for a number and she said I was too short. I mean, why would you even say that? Like, which is why we should not actually push for this whole thing of, asking for their numbers. Like, at that point, everyone will understandably ask you one question. What is the alternative? What alternative would you suggest if you don't ask for their consent? What plan do you have in mind
as an alternative to that consent. It's giving a lot of morally and legally questionable thoughts. I know. Yeah. The world we live in is a nice one. So, and now in 2021, the Ghanaian government, the Ghanaian president at the time, Nana Akufo-Addo, found himself in Switzerland, sitting with the Swiss government authorities. And then he came up with the, he pointed out that we'd like to process our own cocoa at home into finished products. Because most of it is being processed in Switzerland. Oh, the Swiss government representatives were not happy.
Heineken's iconic balanced taste that gives you that refreshing first only made possible by Heineken's 5-star credentials. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
You are now listening to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight, weekdays from 4:30 to 6, only on Eagle FM. Download the app or tune in to a frequency near you.
Welcome back. Now, part of diplomatic and trade relations that, we are not having is how the whole idea of open market has its own flaws, basically. Now, there is no system that's perfect. Every system is going to have its flaws. Every system is going to have its ups and downs. We are not having an honest conversation on things like fair trade, on things like resources, for example. We're not having an honest conversation on value addition. We are not. Why? Because that conversation is literally going to transfer wealth from whoever is processing it now to whoever is producing it now. And you can bet whoever is processing it now have already invested multi-billion dollars into the physical infrastructure and the skills that is enabling them to process this product into finished, to process this raw material or this raw resources into finished products. They are not just going to say, we'll just close up shop and then we'll just start buying stuff from you. Chances of that happening are near zero. Now, what should we do now? I don't know. I'm not a political analyst, but actually I'm 2 minutes into David's time and he's walking in. That's just food for thought. Until tomorrow, same time, same place on your favorite radio station, Eagle FM. From yours truly here, you all have a blessed evening. And please do stay tuned for Business and Economic segment with yours truly, David Shombe.